Hi, everyone. Before we get started today, I just wanted to remind you about our partnership with FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education. Are you between the ages of 14 and 26? I sure hope so. That's the age group I'd really like to have listening to this show. If the answer is yes, you are eligible to apply for FEE's three-day seminars. They are going to be held across the United States, and they are designed to teach young people like you the power of economic thinking. Because you never know. You might have been absent on the day that your public school or your college talked all about entrepreneurship in the Austrian School of Economics. FEE's three-day seminars offer opportunities to learn economic principles that can affect your career prospects, investment decisions, business strategies, and more. Seminar topics include economics of entrepreneurship and the economics of business success, and offer opportunities for young people to learn new methods of thinking that can help them pursue future passions. So if you are between the ages of 14 and 26, please think about this opportunity to join students, successful business leaders, and great teachers in the discovery of the relationship between personal and social wealth, as well as the virtues of an enterprising life. The total tuition cost for the three-day seminar is $79. That includes all meals and housing. Tuition and travel reimbursement scholarships are available. There is no charge to apply. Applications are reviewed and accepted on a rolling basis. Apply today at fee.org/students and make sure you let them know in your application that you heard about this opportunity through the School Sucks podcast.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Dog, everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Podcast 4.0 and the fifth installment in SSP Productivity Month. The next two shows are going to focus on time management, something we have not spent enough time talking about. I've got two great guests for these next two shows. The first one, Kevin Cascella of freedomlovin.com. Let me tell you a little bit about Kevin. He is perhaps best known for something that we are going to spend very, very little time talking about today. This, a quick bio, Kevin Cascella has spent a lifetime devoted to holistic health, fitness, and nutrition. As a 7-year-old, he was the youngest to run across the Oakland-San Francisco Bay Bridge. He later became a competitive swimmer and achieved All-American status at the University of California, Davis. After college, he began training for triathlons, studying nutrition, and eventually became a certified personal trainer. After helping local individuals achieve their fitness goals, Kevin decided to use his success and knowledge to help a worldwide audience lose weight, get fit, and reach their personal best. Today, Kevin coaches triathletes in swimming with his company, Tri Swim Coach, TRI, and consults in the fields of fitness and nutrition. The Healthy Burn for Beginner Athletes, that's a book that Kevin wrote, came about when he realized that most of the athletes he coached for triathlons had their goals set first at becoming fit and healthy and losing a few pounds, and second, at finishing and progressing in races. So one of Kevin's other main sites, in addition to freedomlovin.com, is tryswimcoach.com. He's written two related books, the first and most related, The Complete Guide to Triathlon Swimming, and then The Complete Guide to Sprint Distance Triathlon Training. He also authored a third book with our friend Wes Bertrand called Healthy Mind, Fit Body, How the Mind-Body Connection Can Help You Achieve Your Perfect Weight. He is a world traveler. He is an entrepreneur. I have been on his show before, the Freedom Lovin' Podcast, and this is our conversation about shortcuts and smart cuts for busy entrepreneurs. A lot of the material that we cover today, I'm hoping, will be more relevant in my life in the next 3 to 6 months, because many of his suggestions do cost money. But it was still a very valuable conversation for me, and I think it can be a valuable conversation for many of you as well, even if you're not ready to start spending money to save time. So we're 2/3 of the way through SSP Productivity Month. I did want to let everybody know, just in case you missed the last show, I put out an hour and 15-minute video as a guide to Evernote, a tutorial, which shows you how I use it. A little underappreciated at this point. I'm hoping more of you will go to the School Sucks YouTube channel and check that video out. It's right at the top. Our username is School Sucks Podcast. You can get to it through schoolsucksproject.com. Just click the YouTube icon. Oh, it's also right at the top of that page, too. And it's in the Facebook group. It's on the Facebook fan page. It's on our Twitter. This video is easy to find. Are you running away from it? Don't run. Or, of course, there's also the possibility that you feel comfortable with Evernote or an Evernote alternative. And in that case, congratulations. Keep up the good work. Sorry about that time I accused you of running away from things. Also, I need people to support this show, please. You can do that by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV. And you join our team as a monthly contributor. It is greatly appreciated. You're listening to this show because you find it valuable. It is a major undertaking to produce. The productions over the course of 2016, and I'm not just talking about audio, but video as well, need to become more sophisticated. You've seen this glorious studio that I have built over the last couple of years, entirely thanks to listener participation in this show. I need a way to showcase it to the world in beautiful and reliable streaming HD. And you're probably saying, Brett, that would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Look, this isn't MSNBC. We're not all idiots here. There are clever ways of making that happen, but there are financial obstacles, much smaller than you would think, but still significant. So if you've enjoyed the growth of the show, the new endeavors over the last 3 years or so, and you'd like to see those things continue, that is the best way to make that happen. Sky's the limit. If you've got a vision and you've got a mission and you've got a way to stay organized and productive, then we've got all that. But we are going to need to buy some rockets and buy some land where we can build a platform to launch rockets from. And then we're going to need to hire a team of filmmakers who are willing to work surreptitiously to make it appear as if we have gone much further than we actually have. And that's where you come in. Bang. So please consider helping us out. SchoolSucksProject.com/AV. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you find this show helpful. So I'm excited to welcome, for the very first time as a guest, hard to believe, Kevin Cascella. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Brett. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while since we talked. Our last conversation was a little over 2 years ago. I was on your show, the Freedom Loving Podcast. I was looking at the show notes for that before we started. We talked about everything in that show.
Right. Freedom. It's kind of a broad topic, and it can apply to just about everything. So,
absolutely. Your site is freedomlovin.com, and I know you've been at it for, you know, overall, your whole process goes back almost a decade at this point, right? And I wanted to just help the audience get a sense of what freedomlovin.com was all about.
Yeah, it started out, actually, I started it in 2012, so about, it's been almost 4 years now, and I started as a travel blog, because I got really into the idea of travel, and, working while I'm traveling, kind of the four-hour work week mentality, and I was planning a trip to Southeast Asia, and I was going to be there for a while. I just bought a one-way ticket to Bali, and it was going to be there for a while, so I started this blog, and I was wondering, like, what's available out there, because my whole life philosophy is my number one value is freedom. So I was looking for different things with freedom, and then Freedom Loving was taken. And so I just took the G off and did Freedom Loving, registered that. And then I started doing these blog posts with videos wherever I was, and just kind of documenting my travel. And I think, like, my parents and maybe like one or two other friends were my only readers or listeners at first.
Right.
So, then I got back. I mean, after I traveled for a little while, I got back and I started doing some more blog posts. And then I had a podcast before. I do another site called Try Swim Coach, and they basically teach people how to swim better for triathlons. And I did a podcast with that. So I was very familiar with podcasting. And so it was about a year later. So I think it was 2013. I just got the bug to start doing a podcast. I had no idea of how it was going to run. I didn't have any thoughts of monetizing it or really like producing it or how I was going to get all the work done, like the editing and everything. I just started doing it. And then it just sort of I was like, oh, I might as well, interview people and kind of talk about all the different aspects of freedom. And, you know, my focus in terms of my life has been in the last, since about 2008 has been kind of building freedom within my own life instead of kind of looking for freedom externally. So that's what I focus the podcast on. I have a tagline. It's Building Freedom in an Unfree World, which is based on Harry Brown's book, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. And which is like a book that I've read 3 times and I refer back to it all the time. And I think it's just amazing. But yeah, that's kind of how it got started. And so I try to cover as many aspects of freedom as possible. I get into internet business stuff because, you know, being able to have a business that's mobile that you can be location independent with, I think is one of the big steps to creating freedom. Mm-hmm. And then I talk, you know, a little bit about philosophy and, you know, kind of breaking free of your own mindset and, you know, sort of becoming happier, becoming more fulfilled in life, which is a big part of it as well.
Right. Absolutely. When I was first introduced to your work, you were doing, or you overall, you were doing a podcast with Wes Bertrand called Healthy Mind, Fit Body. And I could tell just from listening to the conversations that you guys would have on the show, you seemed like a man who had his hands in a lot of pies at that time. Now, is that really the right saying for having a bunch of things going on? Doesn't sound right. I think it is, but doesn't it just make it? It's, I picture somebody who's kind of mischievous and irresponsible,
right?
And maybe a little chubby. Yeah,
yeah. Pies and healthy mind, fit body—they don't really go together.
Lots of irons in the fire, right?
Yeah, irons in the fire for sure.
Yeah, between doing that show and Try Swim Coach, and you were—I remember at least during one stretch of Healthy Mind, Fit Body—you were doing some travel. I think you were in Central America, so. That brings us to today's topic, and that's time management. Originally, when I started thinking about having you on the show, it had a little bit more to do with habits and routines, because even if I like go away for the weekend, my whole morning routine is shot, right? If I wake up in a bed that's not mine. So I wanted to touch on that a little bit, but I really want to focus today on time management. And, you know, I was telling you, I did a show with Jake earlier today, Jake DeSillis. I was very, very comfortable with the subject matter going into that show. But after going through our preparation for this conversation, I found myself very uncomfortable with a lot of the topics that you brought up. And I like that. I'm excited about this show for that reason, because I think over the course of the last several years, it looks like you have a very keen awareness of the amount of time that's in a day or a week or a month, and anywhere where you can save it and turn that save time into more productive time, it seems like you're all for it.
Yeah. When I hear the phrase time management, I kind of think of micromanagement, and that gives me the chills, like in a bad way. And I don't do well micromanaging myself. And I definitely, when I used to work at businesses, companies, I just did horribly with any bosses that tried to micromanage me and insist that they knew what I needed to do at every hour of the day. So I try not to do that with myself. And I think that's the first thing is looking at it that way. And I'm pretty lazy. I mean, I really don't like to work for work's sake. I know a lot of people do. I mean, a lot of people I know, a lot of entrepreneurs I know, they thrive on work. I mean, they get up in the morning, they're like, I just want to work. I don't care what it is. I want to get to work. And I'm not like that. I'm not someone that is like just that craves work all the time. I do like to take on projects that are interesting, but I am into this idea. There was a book that came out last year called Smart Cuts. And I really like that book because it talks about all these myths that are out there that we kind of follow, that we think that we have to work really, really hard. And the idea of taking shortcuts doesn't exist. Like, you hear that all the time. But when you look at it in terms of smart shortcuts, like in this book, it's so much of an easier way to look at it, because you can take things like that. You know, there's that saying that you need to do 10,000 hours to be an expert at anything and to be good at something. And to me, that's just completely overwhelming. Like 10,000 hours. Do I even have that in my life to do? Like, am I going to just have to do one thing for the next, you know, 20 years, and then maybe I'll be an expert, or maybe I'll be good at it. Mm. So I like to, you know, kind of throw that out and say there are shortcuts. There are ways to do things and get things done that involve cutting out kind of all the bullshit, cutting out the stuff that you don't want to do, that isn't like your passion, that isn't something that you are currently really, really good at, and, you know, get rid of all those things and then just focus on the one or two things that are going to move you forward that day.
So, yeah, let's talk about that, because that was one of the questions that you raised. What is the one thing that you're working on? And let's put that into the context of a system or self-awareness in general. What does it look like in your life at any given time? And maybe it changes, you know, hour to hour, day to day, week to week, month to month. How do you go about determining what that thing needs to be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You mentioned, and this is kind of a little bit off the topic of your question, but you mentioned that your day could be thrown completely off by, you know, starting at a different time or something and being in a different location. And I found that that's the case too. Is you would ask me originally about how I travel and I get all these things done, but I've actually found that I do way better if I'm in one place. And that's something that came after years of kind of bouncing around. And one thing I noticed is that building something is really difficult if you're not in one place, or if I'm not in one place. Some people can do it, but I have a really tough time. So I think being in one place, creating a routine, it allows me to build things and be more creative. When I'm thinking about where the next place I'm going to stay is, you know, like every other day, where I'm just bouncing from city to city, then a lot of time is sucked up on looking for that next place to live. And that takes me completely out of any kind of routine. Or even just the dilemma of if you're traveling, like let's say when I was in Asia, I'd be in one place for a few days and then I go, I want to take off. I want to go somewhere else. And I'd land in a new city. And let's say it's like Monday or something. And I've got all these things that I want to do. And yet I'm in a new city and there's all these amazing things I want to see. And it's just this huge, it's like, do I work? Do I catch up on work? Cause I've been in a bus for the last 10 hours, or do I go off and see this new amazing place that I've never been before? Cause either way, I kind of feel guilty. You know, like I'm out there doing the fun things and I'm like, shit, I should be working. I should be working right now. I'm not enjoying myself. Or I'm working and I'm like, God damn, I'm in this new place and I'm sitting here in my desk working. I should be out there looking at stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the type of thing. So as far as the first thing is for me is just being able to get into a routine and just be consistent with that.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm surprised there isn't a travel hack. Maybe there is. I'm actually thinking that there has to be, and maybe we just don't know it yet. For people like you who move around, there's got to be a way to outsource setting up the next location.
Yeah, it's tough. And it depends on where you're traveling to, because like I was in like Southeast Asia is a great example of somewhere where you can't really, I mean, you could book places in advance and have your whole schedule set up, but part of the fun of it is that everything there is negotiable. So, and you have to be in person, obviously, to negotiate. It's not like things are all on the internet. So you show up in a new area and you just go around, look for a place and everybody's got a different price and you just kind of have to bargain your way to the right price. And so, yeah, I mean, it definitely, you can do something where everything is booked and set up and that's one way of doing it. But I kind of like the freedom of just here I am and I don't know where I'm going to be. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about outsourcing, like I just mentioned, and maybe even a little bit of automation more generally today. So the way I introduced this topic to the Facebook group was shortcuts and smart cuts, as that was language that you used earlier, for entrepreneurs. So why don't we start by talking a little bit about outsourcing, which for me, oh gosh, there's a lot of apprehension around this one. And, you know, there's so many things, like I've talked with people about the breakdown, the hourly breakdown of my work week to produce this show. And time again, people have said, you got to have somebody else do that. The thing that comes up most is editing. And I say, no, nobody else could do that. What do I record a show and then give it to somebody else? And then they make the thing that turns into what people hear. That's my job. I think about that as being like 75% of my job, but it's also a huge time sink. You know, like most of the time is spent in editing, even if it's just like, you know, searching for music or looking for video clips that are going to enhance a show or recording a monologue. Outsourcing is a little scary in my world. And I was hoping I could learn a little bit more about it from you, both maybe some general strategies and also talking a bit about your personal experience, things you were able to offload onto somebody else.
Yeah. So outsourcing for you, for your podcast, I would say So what I do is I have my podcast edited, and it's just my editor just takes out 2/3 of the uhs and ums and you knows. And that's really all he does. I mean, then he adds my little intro, and I don't have anywhere near as big of a production as you do for your podcast. I mean, mine is very, very minimal. But if you just had someone doing that and you did the rest of the production, that'd probably save you a few, you know, I don't know, a couple hours every episode at least, in terms of just getting rid of those things. And then you're adding all the little bells and whistles that you have in the show. You know, that's one place to start. And then you can, I mean, I understand. I totally understand what you're saying about it's kind of scary. It's like, how could anyone else do this? I mean, it's like, that's your show. So it's more of like training someone over the course of time and like getting to, you know, maybe have someone that's kind of like a protege, and they're learning how to do all this stuff. And part of it too is like, we both have this, you know, libertarian mindset, and it's hard to find somebody that could be like an assistant that also kind of thinks like that and knows what we're trying, the message we're trying to get across. So those are kind of tricky areas. But my most recent thing is a guy came to me from, just randomly emailed me, and he's in Brazil, and he was in college. Actually, I think he's a listener of your show. If he's not, he should be. But he was looking for some opportunities in entrepreneurship and in digital marketing. And he listened to my podcast, and he's like, "Do you have anything for me? I can do a lot of stuff. I know English. I've got, you know, some skills." And so I brought him board, and he's also completely into the philosophy. He's like, "I've read Murray Rothbard. I've like studied all this, you know, Austrian economics, and I totally agree with all the things that you're saying." And so it was just a perfect fit. I mean, it's like he wants to be my VA, and he also is like an advocate of all these things that I talk about. So that's something that I think is invaluable if you can find someone like that.
Let me ask you this, though. How did you, maybe this didn't exist for you, and it definitely exists for me, how did you get over the kind of emotional discomfort, the apprehension about letting somebody else do work that's important to you? Because I thought, like, how does anybody run a business with multiple, and maybe it's just, for me, to be honest, maybe it's just built from bad experience. You know, I was a teacher for a number of years, and I had, you know, a team of people that I was supervising, like two teacher's aides and a bunch of support staff. You know, people came and went. It was a high turnover job. It was a really high burnout job. Generally, people proved to be pretty unreliable. So I wound up doing a lot of things myself because I was trying to do a good job in this organization so I could move up, and I wanted things done right, and I wanted them done my way. So I had this support staff, but I didn't at the time, and again, this is really circumstances, I didn't trust them to deliver. So maybe that's what informs my attitude about it today. But did that attitude exist for you? And if so, how did you move beyond that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there's so much to that. So for me, I think I started, when I started the whole internet business stuff, I knew nothing about building a website. I didn't know anything. I had been online, but I didn't know the first thing about HTML or anything like that. So I just learned a little bit about what it takes to do an internet business. Because I had this idea, and I was Try Swim Coach, and I had this idea, and I'm like, well, how do I even get this online? And so I found out about this site called Elance, where you could hire people to do things just like one project at a time. And I just went on there and posted something and said, this is what I'm looking for, if anybody can help. I don't have much money. And I found somebody to do a website for $100. And I'm like, okay, I can do $100. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't very good. The website was pretty average and pretty mediocre, but it was done. And I had something to work with. So it's kind of that attitude of just doing it first and not being a perfectionist about it. Like just getting something done. The action is the most important thing. It's not about getting it perfect or, you know, even getting it super high quality. Just taking the action, getting things done. I knew that if I tried to build a website, it would take me 6 months to learn HTML and then to build the thing. And then I'd probably screw it up a few times. And then I'd have to hire somebody eventually to fix things. So that's what really got me. And I was in a position where I just read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books. I read I think I read three of those books in like a few weeks. And I was like, okay, I can't go back and work for somebody else. This doesn't make any sense. And he had this idea in one of the books. He talks about, you need to think, first of all, you need to kind of think lazy. Like, I can't do all this stuff. I don't want to do all this stuff. I'm going to hire people to do these things. And when you think like that, then you start hiring people for specific areas that you are not good at, or you don't like, or you just, you don't want to have anything to do, but there are experts out there that can do them. So that was my first thing, is just getting someone to do the technical stuff, the web design, once I got that momentum, that was the key, is getting just a little bit of momentum. Like, okay, I have a website. And then I added a PayPal. I had this little PDF file, just this one file that was like the thing I created. And I put a PayPal button up there. I figured out how to do that stuff. And I started making just a tiny bit of money. And that momentum is what got me to the next level. And then the first thing that really I think most people need to outsource is just the admin stuff, just like the customer support stuff. Like if you have a product that you're selling online and you're sitting there answering the email, every single email that comes in, you could spend all day doing that because
yep.
of all the
you could.
That come in. Yeah. So I think it's good to do it first. I mean, you get to talk to people that are actually interested in your stuff, and that can be really valuable. But at some point, it's just really a waste of your time when you can hire someone in the Philippines to do that same job for $3 an hour.
Yeah.
And so if your time is worth only $3 an hour to you, then fine. You know, that's what you want to work for. But when you're trying to make more money, and those are the things that you can offload, and it really doesn't add up to that much when you're paying that little amount, then, you know, it's just kind of becomes a no-brainer. And then I think also it's like you were saying, this, it's kind of this fear of like letting go of the, of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And just doing like one little thing, like just saying, okay, there's this one little thing that I can have someone do, and it's not going to affect, you know, much. You're not outsourcing your whole business. You're just saying, okay, this one like technical support or customer support, and just seeing how that goes, and you know, seeing how, you know, how the whole process goes, and then that sort of will build your momentum in terms of the getting over the fear of outsourcing.
Yeah, you know, the other thing too is there's a lot of things that do take up our time that we can't outsource to the Philippines, like going to the grocery store. And one of your suggestions was hiring a personal assistant. And I'm wondering if having one person, you know, that you are able to build a relationship with as an alternative to outsourcing a bunch of different small projects to a bunch of different people, if that's something I would be more comfortable with, even if it was only, you know, 10 hours a week. As far as I've gotten with this so far, we did a series called Presence and Productivity back in 2013, where we first explored these topics of organization and productivity and time management and goal setting. And what I'm doing in January of this year is basically revisiting that series and trying to enhance and update what we did before. But one of the ideas that I was pushing in the original series towards the end was that having a methodology for productivity basically acted as a kind of assistant. You realized that once, and for me, it was really using Getting Things Done, I suddenly realized how much extra time I actually had that was just being wasted from me not being conscious of it. But, you know, the other thing I think too about things like maybe going to the grocery store or household tasks, with podcasts and audiobooks, I'm really finding that it's hard to feel like I'm truly wasting time today. You know, as long as I have some kind of capture device with me, like just a stack of post-its or, you know, even my phone, which I would obviously have with me if I was listening to a podcast, and the ability to jot down notes. So, you know, people can sign up for Audible or audiobooks.com. And obviously we are all familiar with what's available in the podcast world. We can be doing these more mundane, lower value tasks, but also having it be valuable time spent because we're listening to things that can help us with our work or help us with our lives. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I definitely do that. If I'm out and about, I'm always listening to something and trying to gain more knowledge. But at the same time, the stuff like groceries and going to the drugstore and going to, like, I had some car stuff that I needed to get done. This is like back in December. And I got to the point where I'm like, it's costing me like hours just to do, like, oh, I've got these couple things I got to get done with the car, but then I go to the dealership, then I have to wait, and then they finally get to me, and then it's like, oh, it's going to be a couple hours, and I'm like, well, I can't leave, so I just have to sit there. And I felt like it was really cutting into my productivity, and so my solution was to hire a personal assistant that's here, that lives right near me. And I found this, I went to Craigslist, and I just looked for personal assistants, and I found somebody that was right, that lived near me, and she was a kind of retired and just looking for some pick up some work. She was an Uber driver and looking to pick up some extra work. And Yeah, so far it's been great. I mean, the stuff like groceries, I have her, she's doing my grocery shopping, so I just send her a list and then she goes and gets it. And I feel like that time is really, it's really worth the money. I'm paying her $15 an hour. And so a lot of times some of the tasks don't even take an hour. And I for me, it's like, I'd rather use that time like exercising or something else. And I could still listen to my audiobooks and all that, but it's not standing in line at the DMV or, you know, those kind of things where I think all that stuff can really be outsourced and it really can save you so much time. And then I'm not as worried about the kind of the little things because I feel like I'm taking care of like the grocery shopping is maybe for me. I mean, I need groceries a lot. I eat a lot and I like food. Mm-hmm. So, I spend a lot of time going to the grocery store. So I feel like that, you know, that's maybe an hour a week. And then there's the, you know, whatever else I'm doing, there's like another hour here, another hour there. And it adds up, you know, it really adds up. And I feel like it takes a load off to have somebody that's doing that stuff. And it's a tough thing because I actually put this off for so long to hire a personal assistant. And it's not something that you probably could do, you know, if you have no money and you're just starting out a business or something, you probably can't really do that. But then eventually you're going to say, wait a minute, my time is worth more than $15 an hour. And I'm wasting it. I'm trying to do both. And I feel like when you're running your life and then you're running a business, it's really hard to get everything done.
So here's an interesting way to think about that, because you're talking about the grocery store and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I might spend, this is going to sound ridiculous, I might spend 2 hours a week in the grocery store. And I, a lot of people might be saying, how do you do? You're one man buying food for yourself.
Yeah.
You know? All right. So I do a weekly grocery trip. It usually works out to every 6 days because I will consume 2 eggs a day and eggs come in packs of 12. So that's how that works out. But I often find myself, my gym that I visit 5 days a week is right next to a grocery store. And I often find myself after finishing at the gym, wandering around in the grocery store looking for God knows what. You know, just some tasty treat because I've just worked out. It's definitely time for a meal. I'm hungry. You're never supposed to be in a grocery store when you're hungry. But let's add that time up, right? And let's just say that maybe it's 15 minutes after, you know, gym sessions, and maybe I do one. I can be in and out of there pretty quick because, you know, I'm just going around the outside and I know exactly what I need and I know exactly where everything is that I want in the main supermarket that I shop in, which is a different one than the one next to the gym. But let's say I can be in and out of there in a half an hour, but then add in travel time, which is probably 15 minutes each way. So it's a 2 hour a week time commitment. Now, when someone says 2 hours a week, at first, that sounds like nothing, right? 2 hours a week, blah, you know, who cares? But then contrast that to something that David Allen again presents in Getting Things Done called the 2 minute rule, right? Mm-hmm. If you can do something in 2 minutes, just do it. All right. Well, there are what, 60 2 minute blocks in 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
How many tasks do I have every week that take 2 minutes or less?
Right.
You know, answering an email. I mean, I could think of a bunch of them. None of them are fun. You know, I mean, I like if it's a nice email from a listener and I have time to read it, that's always enjoyable. But just like dealing with some website problem or some payment problem or something like that or an account problem. I see that as taking away my time.
But, super annoying.
Yeah. But think about how many tasks that need to be done actually fit into those 2 hours that are effectively, even though, you know, I've got my iPad or my mobile phone with podcast playing or audiobooks playing, that is 2 hours a week that could be much better spent. And a lot of tasks, maybe 40 or 50 or 60 tasks could fit in that time.
Yeah,
I think I just convinced myself to change that habit.
That's right. Well, I think that's the first step. And then the next step is who else can do those 2 minute tasks that aren't that complicated, you know, like it's just go to the next level. And we'll get into the stuff that I do online, but I have a few people. I have an editor, and then I've got a VA that does a variety of tasks like social media and sets up my newsletter. I send these newsletters out online, and it just the stuff that's kind of a pain that takes me 10, 15 minutes, but she can do it and it's off my plate. And then I have another VA that does my customer support. And I'm actually at the point where I'm also looking to outsource, and this one's been tough, outsource my personal emails because it's getting out of hand. I mean, it's not just personal, but also just the emails that come in from my business that are kind of the routine stuff that mm-hmm. I don't want to just automate it, have some like kind of like a bot send something out. I'd rather have actual personalization. So hiring somebody just to take all those and so, I mean, that's again, like you were saying, 2 hours for groceries. How many hours do you spend on these emails that are just kind of routine, that just the same questions come in or yeah. the same requests or whatever it is? And you could have somebody that sends a nice friendly email back every time and they give them the links that they need and that's it. And I, just to go a little bit further, I mentioned that I've hired people from the Philippines, and that has worked out tremendously well for the stuff that I'm doing. I hired this girl a few years ago, and I needed a VA. I needed someone just to do some tasks, and she ended up, I added tasks to her list. I added more things. Whatever I gave her, she could do it, and not only do it, but actually do it better than what I could do. Like, oh, I need you to create this PDF file and I need this, this, and this on it. And then it would be like literally the next day it would be done and it would be better than I expected. And like every single thing that I give her, it's like that. And then it's even amazing to me that she'll even create things that I didn't even ask her to do that are really helpful. And so I found that it's just added a lot to my online businesses. And it's especially with the Philippines because they typically, and to generalize a little bit, they have a really strong work ethic over there, but they don't have an entrepreneurial streak. So
yeah,
they don't want to take your ideas and run with them and start their own business. They want to actually work really hard for you so that they can, they want to just make you happy, and then they're going to get paid more eventually.
Absolutely. Let's transition to talking about some of the time-saving tools that you use. The first one I think we've been covering with examples here, you mentioned Upwork. That's pretty easy to go on there and connect with people and hire folks remotely to do various tasks.
Yeah, I love Upwork because it used to be called Odesk. And I love it because you can create teams within Upwork. And there's so much accountability there because what it does is it's a system where you can go in there, post a project that you have, and then take bids on whatever the project is. And then you can select, and usually you get a lot, like depending on what your project is, usually you'll get a lot of people from all over the world. And you can see their background, you can see their ratings, what other people have rated them, what projects they've done, their portfolios, you know, everything about them that you need. And then you can email them and set up an interview. And it's a great way to sort of narrow down who might be the perfect person for your whatever you need. And I found that for me, the way I do it is most of the time, unless I'm hiring somebody that is going to have to talk to people or interact with people on a regular basis, I usually just look over everyone, send an email to the top two people that I think would be good, and then have a little email dialogue with them. And if it sounds good, I just hire them right then. I don't try to set up Skype meetings or anything like that. And that's worked out pretty well because you can easily fire people on Upwork as well. So you hire them, and if it's not working out, you can just fire them. Or you can hire them on a trial basis and just say, hey, this is for a week. I just want to see how it goes. And, you know, a lot of these people are living in places where $3 an hour is middle class. Mm-hmm. So you can take that chance and say, I'm going to pay you $3 an hour for the next week and just see how it goes. And so, I really love it. I really love the system. And you can have people working full time. You do pay, of course, there's a fee involved that you're paying to Upwork in that. So it's like a certain percentage that goes to Upwork. But that's one that I highly recommend for anyone that's doing anything like online or any projects that you have. It's just, it's a really easy. And the other thing is it's fast. I mean, if I want something done, like let's say I have some coding or some design that needs to be done, I can put up a project. And then the next day I'll have a whole bunch of bids. So I can get it all done super fast. I don't have to wait very long.
Absolutely. Another problem that I used to have, especially with show production, but I think this translates into a variety of pursuits. I know something is on my computer, or if it's not on my computer, I know it's on the internet and I've seen it before. You know, I've seen this web page before. I just have to find it again. In the early days of doing this work, and even back into, you know, teaching, when I was teaching history, gosh, the web was much newer then and in many ways more difficult to navigate. But I would find and lose things all the time and spend a lot of time searching for things. I wanted to talk about, first of all, generally how you use Evernote, but maybe more specifically after that, how it helps you save and maybe even manage time.
Oh my God. Yeah. Evernote is insane. Like I can't believe I did so long without it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's my life was a mess before Evernote. And like you said, you're like losing things online. I mean, that was a daily occurrence for me. I'm like, where did I put that? Where did I save that? Like, I just had this thing and I saved it somewhere. I'm searching my hard drive and I'm looking all over for it. And yeah, Evernote is a lifesaver when it comes to if you're the type of person like me where you're absent-minded and you have your mind on like 80 different things at any given time, then you can't do without Evernote. And yeah, I looked back, I was thinking about that because I knew we were going to talk about this today. And I was like, how did I do things before? And I used to just open up text edit files and put them in there. And then sometimes I'd lose those files. Sometimes I would forget to save them and they would just disappear.
Yep.
And it's just, yeah, it's a total disaster. But yeah, that's the main thing for me that Evernote has done is it's gotten me to where I don't lose anything anymore. I mean, I just go, you know, I'm thinking of something, oh, I need to look this up. And it's like, you can just search on Evernote. Where did, and then there it is. It pops up.
Yeah. So, it can also has the potential to make you smarter in this format, because once you've accumulated enough notes, I'm looking at mine now and I have the notes for this show open, but I can see that in my Evernote, there are 1,423 notes. And fortunately, most of those exist in a section called Things Done, yeah. Which is good. Yeah. It's good they're not in inbox.
Right.
That would be a problem. So What I'd be interested in hearing is how you organize your Evernote.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably not as much of a ninja as you are with it, but it's for me, it's just every day I have a note for each day, Monday through Friday, and actually Sunday through Friday. And so then I just add my little things that I need to do in each of the days. So I kind of have a theme for every day. And then if I have important things that needed to get done, I just copy and paste them into the next from one day to the next. And that's basically how I do it. And then I have the little check boxes. I still get a thrill. I know there's like some theories out there that checking things off is kind of not so mentally healthy, but I get a little thrill out of checking the little box off.
I do too. Yeah. I'm going to have that challenge this month as well. I'm having an author come on to tell me why really successful people don't use to-do lists, and maybe I'll get over them someday, but that day is not today. I love my little check boxes and my checks.
Do you read James Altucher at all?
I listened to his podcast for a while and I enjoyed it. I thought he had a lot of good conversations with a lot of really successful and inspiring people.
Yeah. Yeah. His books, he talks about that idea. He's like, to-do lists are the path to leading to insanity. And I never do to-do lists. And I'm like, that's kind of an interesting concept. I just still haven't gotten to the point I like that idea of not having this constant list of like, oh, I got to get all these things done. And inevitably you don't finish it ever. And so it's just it's a kind of an endless assembly line of things to do. But he says, just do themes. Like every day is a theme. And I sort of do that, but then I still have the things within the theme that need to get done. So it's like, not really sure how exactly that is done, but if anyone knows how to do themes without to-do lists, I would love to hear more about that.
Well, I think about it in terms of projects. So every project has a series of steps or next actions. And every day I just copy and paste a morning routine into a note for that day. So I have a note called today, or it's like a group of notes called today. And then every day is an individual note. And then at the end of the week, I drag them all into another folder called completed daily lists. So, you know, I'm looking at today, I just copy and paste the morning routine that has everything I do in the morning before 11 o'clock. And I check them off one by one. I love it. I'm open-minded. I look forward to hearing what other people have to say about this. And then I generate a list of tasks that are pretty much everything I do. A lot of them are 2 minutes or less. A lot of them are the actual next actions in larger projects. So I'm open to a better way of doing it, but I find this incredibly satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds good to me. And part of it, I think, is just what works for you. Everyone's a little bit different. But
do you ever delete anything out of Evernote?
I haven't yet. I have a lot in there and I just kind of keep it all.
Yeah. I find it's a really fantastic record. And for the podcast, it's great. I might have started to say that It can make a man or a woman appear a little bit smarter in a conversation because someone could say something like, hey, remember the time you said this thing about permaculture? And I can click on it and I can go, ah, yes.
Yeah, that is so cool.
I worry about maybe becoming, that being said, I worry about becoming like too dependent on it. But again, it says in Getting Things Done, the head is for having ideas, not for holding them. Evernote seems to be doing a great job of holding them for me. And it's a really trusted system. And I think having a trusted system as a kind of foundation for productivity is really important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, it reminded me, I just, my friend just sent me a link to, there's a thing that is just kind of related. It's called, I think it's called Smart Key. And the guy, you know who John McAfee is?
Yeah.
So I guess he just invented this thing and it's like a key to everything in your life. So it's basically like your, all your passwords, all your key, your physical keys to doors, your remote keys. And it's like all in one. And you, if you lose it or something, there's actually a place where you can go and get everything restored. And it just sounded like the same kind of thing in actual real life where you're dealing with actual physical things and remembering passwords and having everything. And I just thought that was the most amazing thing because I hate the whole thing of like, wait a minute, where did I store this password? Like that gets so annoying. And
yeah, someone said to, I was advised against storing passwords on a cloud hosted service. But here's a little trick for that I use. There's so many things, like basically almost every website that's useful outside of YouTube and Wikipedia require a password. No, that's not even true. I have a password for a YouTube account. So yeah. If I'm juggling, gosh, I don't know, 30 or 40 passwords, I try to reuse a lot of passwords over and over again, but I know that's not always advisable and the rules don't always apply. Sometimes passwords have to have a capital letter. Sometimes they have to have a number. So my trusted old password doesn't work for everything. So I just, if I know that there's five different passwords that I use, I just create a note called passwords, every site, the login information, and then I just put either the first letter or the last letter of the password and then asterisks for how many, and then, well, usually just a bunch of asterisks. I used to do for how many characters there were in the password, but if I know the first letter, then I know what the password is. So yeah, there's a way to do it that's a little bit more secure. I will get mail about that piece of advice, I'm sure. And then there's another thing, like something, you know, doing something that you could always remember just as a password and then just adding whatever this service is. So if it's my dog, Sonic, these are not my real passwords, but if it was my childhood pet, the Black Lab Sonic, for YouTube, the password is Sonic YouTube. For Amazon, the password is Sonic Amazon. This is, again, an oversimplified example. Yeah. And we do not give password advice or online security device at School Sucks Project. But that was a way around it because there was no way I was going to. And that's a waste of time. Trying to remember what your password is and waiting for emails.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. From to reset them. Such a waste of time. So speaking of time, we are just about out of it, Kevin, but I wanted to do a quick lightning round with some of your other suggestions. I'll just give you a little prompt and maybe you can just give us a small amount of information on each one. I did want to also incorporate a listener question from the Facebook group into the show before we finish. But here is the lightning round of time-saving suggestions that you offered. Here's an interesting one. Don't write your own books. What do you mean?
Don't write your own books. Well, you can hire a ghostwriter to do a book. I mean, I've done that in the past where I had an idea and I didn't really have time to write the book, but I had this idea that I didn't think anyone else was doing, so I just hired somebody to write the book, and that I ended up putting that on Amazon Kindle and making a few sales. So there you go.
So if the purpose that is, you know, activating that project is not the joy of writing a book, and it's more something like be first to market with this idea. Because I've had so many ideas like that where like, yes, strike now. This is a great idea. Wait a minute. Yep. There's no way you have time to do that. Too bad. Make a note, file it under someday maybe, and maybe you'll get to it eventually. All right. So that's an interesting one. Don't cook.
Yeah, don't cook. Yeah, that's something I started doing recently. There's a service that I found here that does paleo meals delivered. And so I signed up for it and you can get three or five dinners or dinners and lunches every week delivered to your house, or you could, they deliver them to these CrossFit gyms, and then you just go pick them up and stick them in the microwave, and it's completely healthy. There's plenty. It's like they're plenty big enough. And I personally don't like to cook. I know a lot of people love cooking. I don't like it. It takes time. Again, there's an hour between cooking and cleaning up. There's an hour every single night that you can save by doing something like this. Now, I pay for these paleo meals. They're a little more expensive. You can definitely get cheaper ones. I think these are, like, I pay $52 for 3 meals a week. And the rest of the time, I'm usually either going out to eat or I'm cooking something that's really easy that doesn't take much time and doesn't have a lot of cleanup.
Yeah, I remember when I first went low carb like 6 years ago. It can take a while to cook and not so long to eat. And so I started kind of coming up with this balancing act of never spend more time cooking than it takes to eat. It doesn't seem productive to me. But then over time, I really, and again, audiobooks and podcasts help with this. I grab my headphones and I, you know, trot off into the kitchen gleefully when I'm hungry because I know I'm going to get to listen to something that I like and go through the process of making a meal. So I think there's a lifestyle balance aspect to that. Like if it's something that you enjoy and you can make it into productive time or even just valuable time in that it's leisurely and enjoyable, which we obviously have to have a fair amount of in our lives as well. But eating well is always the first thing that suffers when I'm really, really busy. No, going to the gym and then eating well. So I remember I was really cranking away at something at the end of last month, just like working on it all day. And suddenly it was 10 o'clock. I was still in sweatpants. I smelled awful. You know, that's the biggest generator of BO is sitting still for long periods of time. Many don't know that. And it was like 10 o'clock and I said, I give up. Grubhub, Chinese food.
Yes.
Still faster than going out and getting Chinese food.
That's right.
Yeah. So the balance is really important to me. And that was a big priority for me, awareness of lifestyle balance last year. So I'm hoping that being busier with work this year won't affect that too much. Getting information faster was another tip. This included how we consume not just books and podcasts, but also ways around consuming some books, right?
Yeah. Well, I have a site. I hope you don't mind.
No, please do.
One of my sites. So one of my sites is called 100mustreads.com. And we offer summarized business books. And it's called 100 Must Reads because we started with the top 100 business books that we found. And they're both audio and PDF that you get. So it's really cool because I don't think anyone else is doing audio summaries. I mean, you could go to Audible and download these books, and they're usually like 8 hours or 12 hours or something. But these are just summarized down to like 30 or 45 minutes. And it just pulls out the highlights of the book. Because most books, especially the business books, you just need the highlights. It's filled with examples. And examples are nice, and they're entertaining, and they help you to understand it a little bit better. But if you are short for time and you want to just grab the essentials of the book, then this is a good way to do it. So that's one of my shortcuts there, smart cuts. And we actually have the book Smart Cuts in our list too. And then also, you know, another thing that this is kind of random, but I was always an Android guy. I had Android phones forever, and I just got an iPhone like a few weeks ago for the first time. And one of the reasons why I got it is because Android doesn't have any good podcast apps that you can listen to podcasts on anything other than 1X. So Stitcher is the one that I was using, but they don't have any, you just have to listen on 1X. And I was like, it's just frustrating. I could be getting so many more podcasts in my ears if I had 2X. So the iPhone has iTunes, which you can go up to, I think, over 2X.
I do have one for Android. It is called Podcast Addict. And right at the top, it says 1.0X. It looks like you can go to... Are people insane? You can go to five times. All right.
Wow.
So
yeah, and you can do that on YouTube also. You can actually speed up the videos and it looks normal. You can just go to the little settings and change the speed. So that always helps because I don't like to sit in front of my computer and watch informational videos, but if I can cut that time down, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I think for most videos 1.5 is reasonable. Especially like I'll do a little faster if I'm just scanning for certain types of either footage or content. That was a really helpful feature that YouTube added. And then just super rapid fire here. Amazon Prime, I assume, because everything comes super fast.
Yeah, one time I ordered Amazon Prime and I got it the next, it was supposed to be 2 days free shipping. And I got it like the next morning. I was like, I don't even understand how that worked. Like, it's so amazing to me that that can happen. And you can even get it same day delivery now. And yeah, it's Amazon Prime is amazing because then you get all these other benefits. Like you get the movies and yeah, I there was something else I'm blanking on, but yeah, Amazon Prime is definitely a shortcut.
Absolutely. Uber and Lyft, especially if you live in a city, parking can be a major time suck.
Yeah. I just did a podcast talking about kind of ways to make your life easier with minimalism. And one of the things that Uber and Lyft are, they're, you know, right now they're not super cheap, but when you consider all the things involved, like how long is it going to take you to park? How much are you going to pay for parking? I mean, here in San Diego downtown, you usually have to pay for parking if you go down there on like a weekend. And so you add all that up and the time and everything, it's just so much nicer and easier to take one of those services. And also, I just read an article that Uber is going to slash their prices this year. Mm-hmm. So I really think these things are just going to get cheaper and cheaper. And we're even before the self-driving cars come out, I think we'll be able to live without cars just with these kind of services in the near future. So I'm hopeful of that, because I really don't like having a car, even though it's kind of necessary where I live. But
yeah. It is a major pain in the ass here, especially with the winter. I mean, we have like snow parking or overnight parking bans. Really, like some days, Kevin, I really just want like a hang glider and a key to the door that goes to the roof of my building. And I think I'd be okay. I think I'd be able to get by. But yeah, that's a smart one as well. Hire movers.
Oh yeah. Like I would never move furniture or boxes. I mean, I don't have any furniture. I don't have any furniture of my own now. So I only live in furnished places.
Yeah.
And because of that whole thing of moving stuff and I'm not really attached to any objects, but yeah, just if you got stuff to move, if you have to move, just, you know, don't even think twice about hiring movers, because it's going to save you tons of time and your body isn't going to be sore the next day. And it's, yeah.
Our furnished place is pretty easy to find out there. I mean, I'm thinking it's probably easier in cities.
True. Yeah. Easier in the cities. But it's not that easy. I talk a lot about that. Like on my last podcast, I talked a lot about how I do that. And it does take a little bit of time to find them, but you know, it's a convenience thing. And I like it so much better. And there's a lot of people that are attached to their own furniture, so they don't want furnished places. So sometimes I actually have, it can be even easier. Once I find one, then I automatically will get it, because they're looking for somebody that wants to rent their furniture.
Yeah, absolutely. Good information. And one more thing before we wrap up, I wanted to ask people that I interview this month for like a big takeaway or the one thing that really should be implemented. And I was lucky enough to have a listener ask you that today in our Facebook group. Benjamin said, beyond the usual things like top books, apps, teachers, resources in this area, I'd be interested in hearing both of you discuss which keystone habit is most essential to the fulfillment of other habits, routines, projects in your life. Or phrased another way, if you removed one behavior habit from your life, which one would have the greatest negative consequences for the rest of your activity?
Yeah, and I answered him on the on Facebook, but my thing is very clear. It's just getting up early, and everyone has a different definition of what early is. For me, I need to get up about 6 a.m. And if I'm sleeping in, if I'm waking up at 7 or 8 o'clock, I feel like my whole entire day is just thrown off because I didn't get that first hour in or that first 2 hours or whatever it is. And I feel like when I get up early, I'm able to be more productive. There's something about it. There's something about like, no one else is awake yet. I'm just doing my thing, or I'm doing my routine, and then I'm getting started. That is my one thing that I can't do without. And it's interesting. It's an interesting thing. I'm curious what you do, Brett. But also, I know people like Tim Ferriss. He said his best time, his most productive time, is like between 12 and 2 a.m. or something. And for me, that would never work. I mean, I just cannot be productive in that time. And then I would feel like the next day, like, oh man, it's already 10 a.m. and I haven't done anything. I'm way behind.
Yeah, I don't really. That's the time where I usually start feeling like I need to get out of the house. So for me, it is also the morning. Like when I get up, I'm really excited to see what the next thing I have to do is related to the show. So I get to my desk, I'm ready to work. Like I when I wake up in the morning, I'm excited to go to work. And I feel like by after a few hours of that, I've had it with sitting down. That's staring at the computer. I just need a break. And I find that in the afternoon and evening, even though I will return and continue to try to sit in front of the computer, it's not as magical an experience as it is first thing in the morning for me. And right. I would say just a keystone habit, and it's a relatively new one for me, fully formed. And it was one that I tried to develop slowly over the course of last year, was having a morning routine. And I started, I think, back maybe in April or May, just doing short meditations and then slowly adding more and more predictable steps to starting my day before I actually sat down at the desk. And basically, the sitting at the desk was the reward after all of these things were done. And I didn't really have it fully formed until last December. Last month. And that was probably the most productive month of the year, the most rewarding wow. month of the year. So
that's awesome.
That would be my recommendation.
Same thing.
Thank you so much for your time today and for all of this great information and advice. Can you give your websites for my audience, people who are interested in checking out your work, one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this has been really fun. And I've learned a lot. I'm realizing some of the things that you're talking about. And I picked up a lot on this show. And I'm looking forward to all the rest of the series as well. But yeah, people can just look at my website. It's freedomlovin.com. And there's no G at the end. It's freedomlovin.com. And then I've got my podcast on there. And then my other site that I mentioned, it's 100mustreads.com. And yeah, I'd love to connect with anyone. Brett and I run in the same circles. And so I think that there's a lot of synergy, I guess the word would be. And so, yeah, just hit me up on my website or Facebook. That would be awesome. So, and yeah, thanks, Brett, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm honored to be a part of the School Sucks podcast. And I'd love to chat with you again.
Absolutely. I cannot believe this. I feel like I say this to a lot of people, but I mean it just as much every time. I can't believe that's the first time you were a guest. I think that was such a great conversation, Kevin, and thank you for it. And there's probably going to be a lot of opportunities for us to talk over this year. We're doing theme months. Every month we'll have a different theme. January was productivity. So we can probably do this again soon if you're up for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime.
Awesome. Hey everybody, don't be afraid to enter your name into the queue for future new subscriber geography trivias. You go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV to sign up. It's very easy, takes about a minute, and it would be extra helpful right now. So today's new subscriber is Kim H., and she is from Quebec City. That is in Quebec. That is in Canada. Now, Quebec City, think about how close that is to all of us here in the good old US of A. Did you know that only 1.5% of the population of Quebec City speaks English as a first language? Hey, did you go to school? Did you ever learn anything about the Battle of Quebec? Probably not. It took place on New Year's Eve in 1775, you know, during the Revolutionary War. So while the British Siege of Boston was taking place, the Continental Congress, acting under the assumption that the Canadians were not fighters, and certainly wouldn't want to fight on the side of the British, decided to invade Canada with hopes of an easy conquest over the town of Quebec, an important strategic location. For the American colonies, the commanding general was Richard Montgomery. In August, he set out with a small army to capture Montreal and then move on to Quebec. That September, Benedict Arnold also headed for Canada in command of 1,000 volunteers. They suffered a terrible, revenant-like journey, filled with harsh conditions and infections and unexpected challenges. Nearly half the men under Arnold's command died along the way. It was Arnold who arrived first in Quebec, but the British garrison there had already been warned ahead of time that they were on the way. So Arnold, with his considerably weakened forces, tried to blockade the town and then waited for Montgomery to show up. Arnold's forces were unsuccessful to this end. Montgomery did eventually arrive, and they joined up, and the attack finally took place. On both sides, the British and the colonial, there were about 1,200 soldiers. So the battle began with Arnold launching night attacks at either end of the city during a snowstorm. Montgomery's assault followed, but was repelled by heavy grape shot, and Montgomery himself was killed. Arnold was able to eventually break through the city wall, but once inside, he was severely wounded. His troops were then stuck inside the city, where they were quickly captured, and the assault was driven off. British troops lost about 20 soldiers in the battle. American losses were around 500. Following the battle, the Americans withdrew from Canada, and no further attempt to bring the Canadians into the war on the American side was made. So if you're in the city of Quebec on New Year's Eve, every year, remember to salute the bravery and the foresight of Canadian Governor Guy Carleton and British Colonel Alan McLean. Because if it wasn't for the Battle of Quebec, vous seriez tout anglophone dès maintenant. Translation, you'd all be speaking English right now.
New subscriber geography trivia.